Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Beat, brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. I am, of course, Nick Bangbrenner, along with Brendan Quinn. Snowpocalypse 2 is on the way, my man. How are we doing here in the Metro Detroit area? Snowpocalypse on top of ice, on top of rain, because it's a disaster outside right now.
The backyard condition is...
pretty gross.
It's just a pool. It's just a above-ground pool.
Pretty gross. But either way, we're back for another episode of the program.
But this is like the mudslide time of year for Michigan, and this
we're gonna get
a true introduction to spring.
We're gonna go from
galoshes
48 degrees to 8 degrees in one day. Right now, like this morning, it was 40 something. It's gonna be 8, I think, tonight. So we're gonna go the full 40 degree deal, you know, in one day. We've got the full late winter bullshit weather thing going on here, so that's good. You know, we did have USA curling this morning too. You missed that, of course.
Do you have a US boys, curling jersey at this point?
I should get some of those hats or whatever that Matt Hamilton wears. He's got the long hair and the mustache going this year. I don't know if you've seen him. He looks like he's from 38 Special or one of these.
Speaking of the Olympics, I don't believe we've heard from our boy Nick Baumgartner.
Well, no, we have not. Actually, we need to reach out. We should do this for real.
Yeah.
I mean, we should definitely reach out. Congratulations, of course, to Nick Baumgartner, U.S. snowboarder.
Wonderful show.
I believe the oldest Olympian on the team this year. Is that correct? I think I read that somewhere. He's 40, so I think he's one of the oldest anyway. And got his medal. And everyone saw that emotional plea he had that day where everyone was like, hey, man, like, calm down. It's going to be okay. Yeah. I had people DMing me, right? Because they keep accidentally sending these to me. I mean, some of the nicest messages you've ever seen. Just random strangers like that saw the, you know, his clip, I guess it was, after one of the one run that didn't go so well or whatever, and he was upset about it. And DMing me for days, like, you're an inspiration. I'm going to start snowboarding. One guy's like, we want to know where you train. My son wants to snowboard. And I'm like, you need to ask him. I'm like trying to send all the DMs his way, everything else. But it was pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool to see that all come
I feel like you got a weird insight into...
I have no insight.
What it's like on the other side.
I get crossfire all the time on his mentions. Like, I always get lumped into his... every time. Like the U.S. NBC has tagged me on his, like, stuff before. Like, you know, like, he's up for a big thing, and it's like, here he comes. I'm like, that's not me. I'm like, I'm not a snowboarder. For the love of God, this is cool, though, because I get to see the people that, you know.
Can we change your profile picture to potentially not
Nick Baumgartner?
You in snowboarding gear. Just to really throw things off.
Just do a podcast episode where I try to snow.
Maybe we get it. We send him a picture, or maybe we send him a football, and he can put a picture of himself up there holding a football. And
yeah, we could just switch it up.
Trading places, yeah.
Congratulations, though, to our...
Congrats to Nick representing the UP, old shitty guys like us. Gotta love that.
The official Olympian of this program, of course.
100%.
Official and unofficial. But yes, either 100%. Way, mailbag episode today. There's not a lot going on in football land, of course. We've got the draft and everything else coming up, but there's plenty
of hoops. You got some questions there.
Yeah, we've got stuff to talk about, but there's plenty of hoops going on. Of course, you've also... you're also in the finishing touches of a unique story, and I know you wanted to talk about some of that a little bit before we got into the questions today. I believe we've got some Michigan State and Michigan basketball questions as well to get into today. But anyway,
it's funny that you brought up the weather, and this morning, so I get into these like really bad writing processes that are not healthy at all, and I have found as I've gotten to like more legitimate old man.
Late
30s, right in the thick of it. I've switched from being one of those like late night, you know, I could write into the wee hours of the night. Mm-hmm. I find now, and I'm curious from you, I have to get up at like 4 in the morning. And I work from like 4 till 9:30, and that's the best of the writing that I can do, and then I'm done and I'm useless.
Because
I can still work, do interviews, transcribe, but in terms of like actual writing,
Is that because
my shit only works in these wee? And but it's awful. That's not a. It's yeah, not a proper way to live. So I'm down here at like 4 a.m. I'm looking outside, like worrying about flooding because it's raining sideways. And yeah,
I mean, well. Are you getting up at 4 a.m. because you know that there will be literally nothing that's going on that's going to distract you at 4 a.m.? Is that why you're doing that?
I think it's as much the distraction. I think it's like the metaphysical when your mind works.
Well, when you
and
just
it's like
get
optimal
up.
Time. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
That's part of it. But I think that you're getting up at 4 a.m. because you think that in somewhere deep in your brain that no one's going to bother you at 4 a.m. But you're going to find ways. You're going to find ways to bother yourself, of course, as you know. Yeah, I don't know.
Pretty good
hard.
About not checking Twitter or falling down the wormholes. I just sit down and I just start writing, and I can write. 2,500 words.
Yeah, right. Same.
At that time, that would otherwise take. If I tried to do it later in the day, it would take 6 hours. I can do it in 2 hours at that time.
I just have to like. We were talking before we started hitting record here. Like my whole problem, because it's a similar issue, a little different, I guess. Because I don't get up. It doesn't really matter the time. It's just like I'll put it all off. Until I cannot put it off one more second, right? Like, and then it's like, okay, now it's time to shut off everything, and then I look like that guy, or the scene in what is it, Silicon Valley, where Richard goes into the room with the headphones on, and like no one, you know, yeah. And he's in like he's got the Swedish death metal music in his ears, and I'll just do that for like 4 hours until it's over, and then like, it's over, and I'll be like, what just happened? And then you know, like that's. It's not healthy either, but, you know, people have their own
processes. You write to metal?
Sometimes I write to music. Sometimes I write to, like, sometimes I write to white noise if it's, like...
Same.
If it's if I can't, you know. It depends on what's going on, but if it's something that's pretty intense, usually it's, like, I put it off all the way until I can't put it off anymore, and then I, like, force myself to go through it. That's just what I do.
Do you, if you're writing a piece like, say, the McCarthy piece?
McCarthy piece, what are you talking about?
Or McNamara piece that you did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Like a long,
Cade, yeah.
Do you sit and do you just write that thing and file it? Or do you like write, rewrite, or do you get like stuck on sections and stuff like that?
Yeah, no, that one's done in parts, you know? Like, I think it's done in, the more... older I've gotten, of course, and the more that, you know, that since I've been here and they, you know, they afford you more time to write on these things. And when you have more time, that means you have to actually have to use it properly. I mean, a lot more of it comes into like thinking it out. I think I spend a lot more time probably thinking, you know, about things, about how it's going to go. And then the actual writing, I think I sit down and just go. But I can get stuck on those, like you said, yeah, like where it becomes, you know, and that's when I just usually hand it off and I say, okay, if I'm going to just start writing it over and over again, I'll just send it to somebody else. And then they'll be like, you're overdoing it. Right. Like,
right.
That's usually the time where I'll say enough. If I'm erasing it 13 times in a row and sending it off and changing one word, then it's like, okay, that's, it's not going to matter. You're so far into your own brain that it won't matter. But yeah, very interesting. The quote that always holds up, it is better to have written than to be writing, or however that quote goes, is very true.
Uh-huh.
Very true. Uh-huh. Not everyone understands that, but those who understand that, and then there's plenty on this of our listeners who understand that, I know, there's writers out there who listen to our show. It is better to have written than to be writing.
But you and I are both creatures of... Yeah. Of habit in terms of the deadline is the process. When people are like, what's your writing process? I'm like, filing before the deadline. That's my process. Yeah.
If somebody tells me that they can't wait one more day for it, then it's time to go. Like
that's when you'll get what you need. That's why, honestly, I get asked about, and this isn't like, I'm trying to be like a flex or anything, but like I get asked often like about a book.
Sure.
When are you going to write a book? Would you write a book? Do you want to write a book? And I'm like, sounds like a goddamn nightmare. Because... Unless they're asking for a chapter at a time, I don't know how I would do it. Unless
one day
it's like,
at a time. Yeah.
I picture it being like a week before the transcript is due and me being like, well, I have to write 60,000 words by next Thursday.
Buddy, they got white noise videos on YouTube that'll play for 20 hours. You can just turn it on and go. It won't matter. You can figure it out. You just got to get in the zone. Well, I'm sure this story is going to be fantastic whenever everyone reads it.
It's all right. I mean, it's interesting. This one's about went down. And I did Memphis and Murray State back to back. Memphis already ran, and is kind of interesting in hindsight because they're getting it going a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad I didn't bury them, which I almost did. So that was good. And then the Murray State
bullet piece. Dodged on that one. Good job.
Yeah, that would have really come back and bit me in the ass. But the Murray State piece. I spent like 3 days with the head coach there, and
that's a cool.
You
one.
As a lover of the mid and low majors of the mid, mm-hmm. that whole kind of region, right?
Yeah, the Ohio Valley or whatever.
It's south, but not south, and it's Midwest, but it's not Midwest, and the Ohio Valley is. Yeah. Murray, Kentucky's a place. Spent 3 days there. I've told a couple people, like the first thing that someone said to me when I got there and said, you know, I'm spending 3 days here. They said, that's 3 days too many.
That's a one night. That's a one night town unless you live there. But like, it's one of those unique places that definitely knows what it is, you know, like.
Yeah. And if you love hoops.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of spot you want to be. Like, if it's up to me, I would do two of these a year.
It's so cool that they're, you know, that the Murray State's program, and, you know, we were talking about this last night, like when I was covering Western Kentucky, and whenever I know people in Bowling Green that'll read your story and they're going to be heartbroken because of where mm-hmm. Murray is going with basketball now. You know, when I was covering Western back, you know, 12, 15 years ago, whatever the hell it was now, you know, they were making that transition to chasing that football money. And there were people that were like, if we could just like hang on here with the Missouri Valley, maybe. And now look at Murray and basketball, man. Like, that's, they never strayed from who they are. You know, the coaches that they get now, it's like a bad, you know, I mean, people will read the story, but, you know, it's a program. It's a legit deal. That's pretty cool. It's a cool thing that they've carved out there.
It's, you know, it's they, to their credit, and I you know, I didn't get into this in the story. I probably should have, like, but they didn't chase
the ball. Well, they had no choice, to be fair. They had no choice. But they could have forced
it. But other places that weren't that much different have chased it.
Right.
And they're stuck in no man's land. Right. And like, telling you, I pitched the idea. I wanted to go cover the Conference USA tournament this year.
Yeah.
It's just this island of misfit toys. They play their league tournament at
the Cowboys practice facility. Yeah, that's where Western is
stuck there. There's a lot of programs that have like
great programs,
legitimate
too.
Basketball histories. That are in this dog shit leagues.
And it's
Old Dominion, you know, Charlotte's got basketball history.
Yeah,
Western Kentucky, mm-hmm. MTSU, UTEP's got a decent basketball history. And they're all just kind of maligned in this weird league where they're like, we play football. And it's like, you don't play football.
That's the hard thing. Because it's like, because Western's an example of a team that, of an athletic department anyway, that's found a way to have a pretty good, I mean, they have a good football program. They produce good players.
FCS football's fun.
But it's like,
fun. It can be a good part of your identity.
You're still in that thing where it's sucking up too much air, you know? It's just taking too much air too much air away from hoops. But either way, that's another story for another day. But
we haven't even gotten to questions.
Mailbag questions today. Let's see. Let's just get into these here.
Let's get it.
See if we can get a basketball one first, because I know that is going on, but I don't think there are many basketball ones here today. Are people not?
We got one that is interesting.
Okay,
here
we go. Okay, here's one down here. Go ahead. I found some.
From Steven.
Yeah.
On my other podcast, I mentioned that Dickinson might make more money by staying in college next year.
Oh, right. That's what I was going to, yes.
Pro.
Yeah.
So Steven asks, as NIL continues to unfurl, do you see this changing how you view cover players that are still kids and they're still professionals or both? So let's break this down into two questions, right? Because on one side, I want to talk about this idea of there are going to be players, I think more specifically in basketball, who will be able to earn more potentially by staying in school versus going pro. And then there's also this other question that Steven's asking of, does it change how guys like you and I will proceed in covering players as, you know, amateurs versus professionals? That is a good question. So first part. Yeah, I do think for basketball, I was talking to CJ Moore about this yesterday, and it's a piece we might work on in the spring, and I'm probably just going to put it out there and someone else will take it, but whatever. But I think especially for traditional centers who don't have a place in the NBA per se and are just not really seen as
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But are guys who can go and, you know, and can dominate
and be awesome players level. Like DeJuan Blair. Remember him?
Yes, absolutely. I remember DeJuan Blair. But like a guy like even Luka Garza. Could have played for 12
years in college. Yeah. Yeah, right.
A guy like Luka Garza, who's on a two-way. I was just actually on a flight with him.
Yep.
He's on a two-way. And yeah, he gets a cup of coffee with the Pistons here and there. But he's, you know, a G League player. And I'm not sure, you know, I don't, who knows what he's getting paid right now. Let's say he's getting paid, whatever, half a million, a million bucks, right? Whereas if you're at Iowa City, you're the biggest thing in Iowa City, you're going to go score 2,500 career points. They're going to retire your damn number. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. Yeah, you might.
Right.
Depending on the place, you could potentially make more staying in college for a year. And I think Dickinson, you know, the comment that I made on the pod with Dylan was like, did he kind of paint himself into a corner because he said at the beginning of the year, like, I'm playing one more year and then I'm gone and blah, blah, blah. Well, you find me the mock draft that has Hunter Dickinson in it, and you know, I'll agree with the premise of what he said, because right now I just don't know.
Yeah, right. Where's he going to go?
If he's saying he's going, okay, where?
Right, exactly.
You know, and I'm not trying to bust balls or anything like that, but that the reality of it is if he gets to the end of the year and he's a borderline second round draft choice, are you just going to go for the sake of it? Or would you come back to Michigan? You can be an All-American and you can get paid for that.
Right. I think it has,
I don't know what the answer is.
It has
like
to
what you want to do.
Depend on it has to depend on how much money you're making, you know, number one, and how comfortable you are with that. And I don't know the exact figures on who's making what and who's doing this and that. You know, I know that, you know, on the football side there are some guys making money. You know, JJ McCarthy made good money this year. I don't know how much, but I think it was there were some commas in there, you know what I mean? Like I think that Aiden Hutchinson, I think, actually turned down you know, Austin and I were reporting on some of that. I think he may have turned down some because it was like, well, I just don't know if I want to get involved. But I think point was, is there were some opportunities, right, for a guy like that. And in a place like this, this would be one. Ohio State would be another. Notre Dame would be one. You know, you think of your brands, Alabama, USC, Oklahoma. These are places that, yes, your career players, like Xavier Simpson would be a good example of a guy who just left. Like, you know, like, there's nowhere for him to go. I mean, like, there would be no pressure that external, like, you got to get out of here. You got to get out of here. I think that, like, for a kid like Hunter, maybe that's something that he's still figuring out in his own head of, like, well, okay, like, how easy is this NIL stuff right now anyway? Is it a pain in my ass? Am I making enough money? That's all for him to decide. But I think that, you know, we saw for so many years that pressure for these college basketball players of, like, if you're a third-year player, you're a bum. Like, you're, that's just this, like, it was this weird stigma that was just there that, like, if you stayed 3 years, you sucked. You know, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that was real. That, you know, there were kids coming out back then that thought about that. Like, I can't be in college for more than 2 years, or, you know, I got to go to Europe or something. I just got to get out of here. And so I think that if nothing else, that should be able to go away, right? Like, whether or not it works out right now for a kid like Dickinson, I'd be curious to know. But I think in time, I absolutely think you'll see that.
I do. I do. I as well. Like look at a guy like Cassius Winston.
Yeah.
You know, after his junior year, he takes him to the Final Four, and there had to be the question had to be asked, are you going to consider the league? And now, and he did a little bit, but his knees were all banged up, and he didn't, I don't know how much of a real thought he gave it, but in this environment, it'd be a no-brainer.
He'd be like, no way.
Wouldn't consider it. Yeah, like, I'm going to go back, I'm going to be Cassius Winston at Michigan State.
I'm going to be making money at Hank Graff Chevrolet or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I don't know how it'll be in football, but in basketball, the other thing that I wonder about on the basketball side is your mid, low major guys who now have transfer opportunities
now,
that they can go to North Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville, Michigan, Michigan State, wherever, and be a marketable newcomer.
Right.
You know, that has a level of commodity to him where, okay, you might not be considering the pros, but how much are you going to consider leaving only for,
right?
Like, you could be in a great situation at Murray State.
Right.
Okay. But if you're going to tell me I can transfer to Louisville
for 1 year and make 500K, yeah. Yeah, I'll do it.
That's going to be pretty hard, man. Well, you're basically going pro at that point, kind of in its own way.
There's going to be ripples that we haven't seen yet because, like everything else in this arrangement that we call college mm-hmm. athletics, you know, the richest of the rich are going to benefit at the top, like it's always been. And these up transfers in college basketball have always been a problem for these mid-major coaches, right? It's always mm-hmm. been a battle they've fought for years of, you know, I found a guy, he was awesome as a freshman, he was a freshman of the year in our league, he averaged 20 points a game, no one's ever heard of him, and the next year he's gone. He's in the SEC or somewhere else, and then sometimes we never hear from him again. I remember that from covering those leagues, right? And so that's been something I think that's been going on forever. This is just a new thing they got to fight. But I do wonder, for a place like Murray State, let's say, if you've got a community that's dedicated to what you're doing, if that doesn't maybe give you, like, Western Kentucky, I would think, is a place I think of a lot of, like, there are people there in that community that will pay kids. There are kids mm-hmm. at that place that will make money on NIL, good money, to play college basketball there. And, you know, Stansberry, yeah. who's their coach there, he'll recruit to it, and they'll get players. I promise
you. I'm pretty sure he was doing that before NIL, right? Brother.
So, like, they'll get players, and they will have people there that will support those kids, and it will be a big deal for them, you know? And, like, those are, if you have a place like that, that's something that people didn't think about, I think, at the very beginning of this, when they just looked at football. I actually think basketball, like, you brought up Michigan State, great example. If Michigan State hoops continues to have that sort of, like, no matter how long Izzo stays there, if they keep that familial feel around it, they'll always mm-hmm. be able to pay guys, right? Like, they'll always sure. be able to have avenues for those kids to make money within the program. So, yeah, I think that's what you're looking to do, is just make sure that you have opportunities for those guys. The bigger question, though, I would ask you is it going to change the way you cover? And that was the second part that was asked there, which is, I've definitely thought about that, like, because we've gotten, you know, I get so many emails from these people. They're like, hey, I got an interesting thing about this guy's NIL opportunity. I'm like, well, I don't care about this guy's, you know.
Right.
That's not, this is different now. And I don't think they understand. I think the question would maybe be more for the athlete than it would be for us. But, like,
mm-hmm.
for me, that's something that I don't care how much money you're making in NIL. It's not really a concern of mine. And, you know, that's just how, like, I look at it, I guess.
And I feel like as you and I have kind of, like, fallen into our respective jobs, like, neither of us really overly care about sports business. Like, that's its own thing.
No,
that's its own beat. There are people who cover that as their thing, and they do that, and good on them.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. I don't particularly care.
Yeah.
Like, when I worked as, like, a beat guy, right, at the New Sentinel and at M Live, right? We had to FOIA the coaches' contracts. And, like, there is a place for that, and that's your job. So I did it because I had to do it. Well, that's not my job anymore, and I don't care.
No, right.
So I'm not going to do it. I don't think it changes in any way how I would particularly deal with an athlete. I mean, there are, because it's still up to them.
Like, exactly.
Look, if I want to talk to you,
it's their decision anyway.
And if you don't want to, okay, that's fine.
That's where, like, it stops.
You might have someone to answer to, though. Like, and it might not be the school anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
right,
like, because if I'm running Quinn Chevrolet down the road, and I'm paying such and such player a certain amount of money, and then I see online, like, he doesn't do interviews, he doesn't do this. Well, I might reach out to him and be like, this is actually a two-way deal. Like, you're supposed to be doing stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. If they
so I think there is some of that. But at the same time, a lot of these NIL deals, right, from Quinn Chevrolet. the better chances, I'm paying that dude to play for my team because I want him to go get wins. And I don't really actually care about him
making,
I'm going to put his face on a billboard and that's it. I don't actually need him doing anything.
He's not going to sell one car for me and it's fine. Like, that's, you know.
He's going to go win me an Atlantic 10 title,
That's all I care about. And I, you know, we all know that there are people out there, the Buddy Garrities of the world, if you will. And, you know, God love them. They're some of the best people. We all know several of them. Those people who live in the wind, who will always be able to step up and help these people. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting in terms of like, will it change how they're covered? Because I have seen, you know, some kids, you know, they'll give the exclusive interview to, you know, somebody who pays them. And, you know, I do wonder if that becomes a thing, and I haven't seen this happen yet, but I do wonder if that becomes a thing where we see kids be like, to, you know, to the school, like, I'm not participating in any interviews.
Could get weird.
Here at all, unless I'm making money on it. And if that happens, well, then yes, that will change how they're covered. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm just going to tell you. Like, then they're a professional athlete, locked, stock, and barrel, and it's like, now you're no different than Kevin Durant is for real.
Right.
And we take away that thing that they don't always understand, that layer that is there of protection that, you know, as responsible journalists, we give them because they're kids. You know, and
that
like that's
true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
you know. And I do think the schools, as long as there is a level of uniformity, which,
good luck with that. Yep.
But, like, you do have the scholarship to fall back on.
Right.
That you can say, look, you're still a scholarship member of this athletic department. And as a scholarship member, you are
required to do this.
Required to do A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if a school wants to make
depend on what they want to do.
You're a representative of the university. Therefore, you have certain obligations.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine that's what that falls under. Mm-hmm. And that the schools will always kind of be able to hang on that. That if you're, if it's post game and, you know, X player decides, I'm not talking today because I'm not getting paid. Well, you can be like, well, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But at some point, there's got to be some dudes.
Exactly.
And like, Memphis ain't exactly eager to have, you know, your Imani Bates, your Jalen Durans talk, at least when I've been down there.
How's my guy? Mike?
I feel like 5 years ago,
how's my guy,
probably would have gotten the interview when I was down there.
How's my guy Schroeder doing down there with all the circus? That's a hell of a job that he walked into.
You know the cat poster?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cat hanging. That's how I envision my man down there. It's
a lot going on.
Tough living. I'm pretty sure he did not sign up for what this year's been, so.
I got a good one here, football question. From Jimbo, a longtime listener. Clearly it's a Michigan question. Clearly Harbaugh's hires shifted the culture in ways that benefited the program. What are your projections on the changes? And then he says, I'd appreciate a review of Grant Newsom's playing career. And he has a lot of hope that Grant Newsom will be a great coach. That's a good question, because Grant Newsom was just promoted to tight ends coach at Michigan. And they did just adjust the staff again. Of course, as we saw, you know, bringing in and replacing Mike McDonald was obviously a thing that had to happen. But also, Sharon Moore maintains the co-offensive coordinator role along with Matt Weiss. We saw that Mike Hart will be the run game coordinator. I believe Jay Harbaugh is going over the defense. Ron Bellamy will go over to offense. But Grant Newsom is coming off of, I believe he's a grad assistant with Sharon Moore last year, and is going to be a full-time coach. Now, this is super interesting to me because Newsom, what is Grant? He can't be more than 25 at this point. Like, he's very young. Right. And you remember him when he came in.
Yes.
A review of his playing career would be that Grant Newsom was on his way to be, he would have been an NFL left tackle. He was all the way, had all the feet, had all the ability, the length. He could bend and squat and do all the things. He was playing as a true freshman, as their sixth offensive lineman, more or less the big tight end in 2015. 2016, Harbaugh's best team until last year. Grant was the starting left tackle on that team. I believe as a second year, so as a sophomore, and was going to be a terrific player until that leg injury blew up and happened. But more importantly, I think he's going to be a great coach, because this is a guy who, you know, we used to talk to him like, if these coaches get their claws into you and suck you into football, that might be a detriment to the rest of the country, because he is a very smart, very thoughtful person who I think obviously will be great for young people, will connect well with families. I think Grant will be a great recruiter and has a really bright future in really anything he chooses. So I thought it was really cool to see you know, Harbaugh make that move, because I was wondering about that one. That was one I, you know, I know he had been with them for a minute. He actually did some internships in D.C. a couple years ago with some political stuff, and I'd wondered what he was going to do. And, you know, good for Grant that he's getting that, getting into coaching. Seems like that's going to be where he's going to go with it. And I would think that if he sticks with it, he has a very, very bright future. But I would think if you're Michigan right now, and Michigan State, actually, if you're both these programs, you have a lot to sell with offensive line recruitment. Because I count Grant Newsom into that. He's gonna coach tight ends. But at Michigan, tight ends and offensive tackles in some ways are, you're going to be one of the same. So some really good minds. Chris Kapilovich, Sharon Moore, Grant Newsom. Really like what we get to cover around here with the offensive line stuff. So that's really cool to see going on right now.
I also think it's this is kind of a little deeper into the weeds, but considering what happened, and we've always talked about, you know, what is the level of an athletic department and a university's obligation when a player loses his kind of professional aspirations, career, earnings on your watch. And I don't mean that like in any way that, right, it was fluke stuff and, whatever. But
yeah, it just randomly happened.
But it happened. And I do think it's good and poetic that, you know, he's on the payroll
on the insurance
program. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I just think it's pretty awesome that a guy that had that fluke injury happen gets to decide what he wants to do with football. You know, like, that to me is cool. Like, because he got that, that got taken away from him. You know, and football players who love football, by and large, 99% of them get to decide when they want to stop playing. You know, same with basketball. And he's one that loves football. You know, it's in him. It's in his bones all the way. And so for him to get to decide how I want to do, you know, whatever with my football career, I think that's pretty cool. Not a lot of guys, for guys that get that thing taken away from them, it can go one of two ways, you know. And he's a great example of perseverance and everything else, because at a young age, at 20 or whatever it was, to have an injury like that and your whole life just goes in into smoke, you know, it takes a special kid to come out the other side. But I think he's a really good, you know, he's not a kid anymore, he's a grown-ass adult now, but like, he's a good example of, for younger people, I think, that go through stuff like that, unfortunately, to look at. Because you'd never know by looking at Grant Newsom that all the struggles and everything else, you'd never know it. Like, he's just never lets it bother him. So enough drooling on him for the day, but congrats to him. That's a really cool deal and a great move, I think, by Jim Harbaugh, who, again, as we've said, all the other things that we've criticized him for, I have over the years, his staffing hires have and continue to be, I think, terrific. And on paper anyway, they all, once again, I think, look pretty good. Looks like all the hubbub and everything else that they went through, staff looks like it's in a good place. So that's good news for Michigan.
Yeah, fair. Okay, this is an interesting one, and I want your thoughts on it. I had, where the hell, of course, I can't find it now. Somebody asked, and I apologize for whoever asked it, that I'm not, I'll try to find it so I can give you a shout. But a question about naming the court.
Oh, Beeline, yeah. I saw that.
For John Beeline.
Is this a thing? And are people talking about this? Or is this just...
I've heard it. I've thought about it independently.
Well, yeah, right.
The same thing with, you know, there are some big names that have never had their, you know, their names are not in the rafters. Mm-hmm. And it gets harder when you have a program that has kind of guys who do things like National Player of the Year. Is that just a...
Right.
Is that a cutoff for getting your number retired?
Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable cutoff, but... you know, Trey Burke played.
That's a good conversation. This is a good conversation to have.
He played two years,
and he did not graduate. I don't believe. I don't know if he's come back. I don't know that, but he did not graduate at the time.
So going down the wormhole of what players shouldn't, whatever. Yeah. Fab Five. Okay, that's a whole different conversation. Naming the court after John Beeline is interesting. Mm-hmm. He's the all-time winningest coach in program history.
Yes.
In wins.
Yes.
Might be percentage-wise as well, but Fisher might be higher. Yeah, yeah. Steve Fisher is higher. Bill Frieder is also higher.
In percentage, but...
In winning percentage. But Beilein, all-time wins by a lot.
Yeah,
by He's at 278. Johnny Orr is at 209. So the credentials, right? Two national championship game appearances. Two Big Ten conference...
Regular season.
Titles. Regular season championships. Two Big Ten tournament championships. All-time wins leader for Big Ten at the school. You know, no scandal.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the other context of that.
Key.
The other context of that, of what he brought them out of.
Return to the program, right? Yeah. Well, I mean,
fair LRB. Or not, I mean, you know.
LRB was the bridge.
Yeah.
In terms of.
Well, LRB made it worse.
Or Amaker, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Amaker was the bridge in terms of, you know.
Yeah, Tommy cleaned up a lot of stuff and Beilein.
Bring it out of the ashes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Beilein inherited the ashes.
Yeah.
And then return the program to
national right. Province. Tommy put the fire out, Beilein inherited ashes.
I think that's the way to put it.
Fair, yes.
So there's a lot here.
Yeah.
I don't think how he left. I don't know if there's a level of resentment.
Yeah,
you are going.
I don't know what's going on. It's fine.
There we go.
Okay. I don't know what's happening.
So, yeah, and I mean, look, you and I covered John's basically. You covered it damn near as
well. Oh yeah, I've unpacked a lot of that.
And I covered the. You know, I was there for the mostly the glory. Other than when you know things went a little wonky,
and I was too. I really didn't cover any bad seasons for them, other than one. Yeah. Like you said, the 1 year.
So I don't know.
Now
what
look,
do you think?
I spent a lot of time in those years thinking about that because. Mm-hmm. Especially toward the end, you know, because he'd how many Sweet 16s in a row had been and all these things. And, like, there was no measurement that he wasn't the best coach they've ever had. It's not even close. Like, so it's more about what you want to do. And I think it enters a better discussion about your program. Because the program, Michigan basketball at large, like, we used to have conversations. Mark Snyder and I used to talk about this all the time. Like, when Beilein first started... really getting his feet under him there, and they started winning. They had a hell of a time, like, bringing people back, you know? Hell mm-hmm. of a time getting people to, like, wrap their, you know, former players for all the reasons that we've all talked about 1,000 times.
Yes.
I think that there's something to be said about, well, maybe loosening the idea of what it takes to be honored there, you know? Like, whatever mm-hmm. that ends up being. And I think that maybe could, you know, help with some of that because, like, I think that ended up being, like, a lot of the strain because a lot of guys, it was like, well, I mean, like if you're going to give them a reason to come back, I'm sure they'll come back. But like they're
sure.
For a lot of guys, sometimes it felt like there wasn't much of a reason to do that. And, you know, Beilein tried. And of course, Beilein's Beilein. He wasn't the, you know, most personable guy. Juwan Howard's always going to have a easier time of that. But I do think, you know, yeah, like Trey Burke was a National Player of the Year, one of the best players that's ever played at Michigan. And at the time... we all thought of him that way, and I think at the time, the diehards, and probably still do, but is he still thought of in that sense, even 10 years removed, or whatever it's been now? I mean, as much as he could be? Probably not. Probably not, right? Like, and some of that you'd say maybe is on Trey, but some of that's on the program, and I think that that's the complaint that I see a lot with Michigan basketball, and it's an interesting conversation, because some people would say, like, well, Beilein left. He shouldn't have his name on the court. Well, maybe we should stop saying, like, who should have their name on what and be like, if they accomplished something that was so great, greater than anybody else, they should get their name wherever the hell they want it. Like, I think that that's kind of what it should be. And I think that most people would probably up there agree with that. It's just a matter of, like, I don't know what all that, how important it is to people one way or the other. But I think that's an interesting conversation because people bring that up a lot, right? Like, I saw somebody immediately reply to that tweet about Beilein, should Beilein's name be on the court? Like, hell no. Some people are going to say no for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Like, and I do, if you want to say, didn't win a national championship.
Yeah, okay. Well, who did?
I do think that's, but in terms of getting your name on the court.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's kind of two cutoffs. And it's national championships potentially plural, right? National championship or championships.
I guess it's about what it means to you, though.
Or being, I'm coming at it from my perspective. It's either, right,
the national championship
or it's the epochal guy who covers 20 plus years as head coach.
That's fair.
You know, like John was here, what, 12 years?
Yep, wasn't 20.
He is undoubtedly the best coach, I think, just in terms of being a coach. Like, I think Steve Fisher would probably agree.
Yes,
he's
all
probably
of them
the
would.
Best coaching program. Right?
Steve Fisher's probably said that.
Right. Naming things after people.
Oh, yeah, Frieder would agree too. They all would, yeah.
Is tough. And sometimes, frankly, too, it isn't just as simple as, let's just do it.
Right, exactly.
So the school might be in a position of saying, if we're naming the court after somebody, we need someone to give a $5 million gift and say, hey, name the court after John Beilein.
Right, something.
You don't just do it for the sake of do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works.
I don't either. It kind of caught me off guard. I didn't know if that was something that people had been talking about or if it was something that was coming up. But it's also the thing that comes up, too, about, you know, the statues, and we need to stop building statues and naming things and doing all those types of things after coaches and making people infallible and all this. And, you know, finding better ways to honor people. I think that should be an ongoing discussion within college sports. Because, frankly, when we talk about the court naming, I don't even know if Beilein would be comfortable with that. Like, cause that's the other side of it.
Probably not.
I don't even know if he'd be comfortable with that, frankly. So,
And here's the other thing. What do you do if Juwan Howard goes and wins a national championship
title,
as Michigan head coach? And, you know,
Juwan Howard court, Juwan court, J&J court.
Here's what I would do if I was, for some reason, named athletic director for a week, right? I am going to, Cassie's the only one with an actual retired jersey. No one's wearing 33.
Yes, I think that's correct.
It, period.
Yeah.
The other jerseys are
honored
jerseys.
Names, or yeah, right.
Bill Button, Phil Hubbard, Glenn Rice, Rudy T. Okay. So if I'm running things,
I don't think anybody else has ever worn Rice's either. But yeah,
nor should they. Yeah. You know. And so if I'm running things, I'm going to put a Fab Five banner up with all five names.
Yeah. Right now.
And they're
Yeah.
Else you want to include on it. I'm going to put Trey Burke's jersey among the
honored names.
He was one of two national players of the year.
100%.
So I'm putting that up there. And then I'm going to put a banner up there for John Beilein as the program's all-time winningest coach.
Yeah, I like that.
With 270, whatever the hell wins he has.
I think that's what the Pistons did with the
9 NCAA appearances.
Chuck Daly,
2 national championship appearances, and boom.
It's like the retired jersey.
There.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Not that difficult.
I like that. I think that's good. I think that's all you have to do. I think that's all you ever have to do. Like, people just make such a big deal about this stuff. Like, and of course, Michigan's the one that made a bigger deal about it when it started. You know, you don't have to make that. Sometimes it gets more complicated than it needs to get, but interesting conversation. I didn't know if that was
thing
that was bubbling up or people were just talking one way about it. Here's a good one from Chris. Back in the MLive days, I asked, who's the most famous person you have in your phone? Nick said Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner, of course, and you, Brendan, said Vince Papale, apparently, the Eagles guy.
Amazing answer.
Is that still true, or have you expanded your phone book? Is there a more famous person? I saw this last night, and my phone book has expanded, but the one that I thought was the funniest that I have a phone number of, and I don't know if it's still an active number, is Devin Booker. I covered Devin Booker's like high school recruitment, and now he is like, you know, Mr. NBA, right? So I mean, like,
yes.
I pulled my phone up and B was early, and I was like, holy shit, Devin Booker. How about that? Yeah, he used to answer my texts once upon a time back in the day. Not anymore. Certainly not. Not for decades.
I wouldn't think so.
But there's always like random ones like that in there, right? Like the recruits from back in the day were like, oh shit, I forgot that guy's answered one text of mine back when.
There's definitely a number of those. The old people that you covered once upon a time and then became very
favorite.
Famous.
The graveyard of the unanswered. Your number is blocked by this person now or whatever.
I love that. I love that I answered Papali. That's hilarious. who is also a fellow St. Joe's grad ran or competed in track and field for my father.
Ran for your dad. That's right.
Yeah.
Family friend.
is a family friend. I don't know who the most.
Since then, have you added someone?
Yes, there are certainly a lot more famous people than Vince Papale in the phone. That's a weird question. That's a tough one.
What about a random one? What about a Big Papa Pump level? Or a Vince Papale? Have you added any more of those since then?
I'm sure I have.
Have you talked to Will Ferrell since then? Since then, I'm trying to think here. Did you do a story on Kareem? Did you talk to Kareem?
I exchanged emails with Kareem.
Okay, well that counts. You got Kareem's email address?
I did not ever get him on the phone. I have his email address is there.
I have
a friend who loves going through the phone and trying to convince me to give him a number or two every once in a while. That's a dangerous game.
What about Bill Walton? You got Bill Walton in there?
No. I mean, I've hung out with Bill.
We should get Walton on the pod here.
I'm on the courtside, shooting the shit. The best person in the phone is probably Raf, but the most interesting
there you
to
go.
Speak to.
Yeah, that's good.
Rudy T's in there.
Raft would probably answer.
New Hall of Famer, you know.
If you called Raftery right now, do you think he'd answer on the third ring or the second ring?
If I called right now, it's 11 o'clock. He'd probably be thinking it was for grabbing dinner and drink, so he'd probably answer on the second ring. Would be my guess.
That's what I wanted to hear. I love it. Okay. Here's another good one from Micah. As you look through your phone, what are Nick's five favorite dive bars in the thumb? Which is an interesting one. My favorite, and I thought about this one too. My favorite dive bar in the thumb actually burned down. Believe it or not, which qualifies it as an ultimate dive bar. And it was in Case.
Was this an insurance claim or was this?
I have no idea. It was in Caseville. And do you know where Caseville is up in the top of the thumb there in the water?
Okay.
So it was in Caseville and it was on the water. You could drive your boat up to it and like dock your boat on it and you could get booze in there. It was a dive bar, of course. And it had, Buck Hunter, the video game, and it was a crap hole. And we always went up there in the summers. And then one year we went up there and it was just gone. It burned to the ground. It was just like ashes were on the ground. And so that was it. I don't even remember the name of the damn place. But that was my favorite one. Other dive bars, of course, Frankenmuth was Dead Creek, and Micah knows that one. The other one there, Main Street, was another one in Frankenmuth. That sort of counts as a thumb. A lot up in Saginaw, the Bay City area, I would say. But most of my thumb time was up in Caseville, so I don't really have a lot more dives up there, but my favorite one did burn down. I did remember that. If there's a replacement, Thumb Brewery in Caseville is a good one up there as well. It's not a dive bar, but it's got a lot of good beers up there. So I don't know. We got any
open my window in the office. It's 400 degrees.
You've never really spent any time in the thumb, I don't think.
I'm not familiar not really with the your thumb. I'd have to find out.
There are dive bars everywhere, right? Like, so there's a lot of them. I don't know the names of them. Like, to be quite honest with you, like, and Mike,
here's what I need from a listener.
Everywhere you've
here's
been
what I need,
in that
here's
area,
what I need from a listener.
Yeah,
I need the best golf course to hit in the thumb with a dive bar
attached
recommendation so that I can do a round of golf there followed by a beer.
Well, it should be somewhere up in the water. Yeah, it should be somewhere up by the water, like Port Huron or on along the Port Austin along the top.
I haven't gotten up there at all. That is uncharted.
It's a different area
for me.
Eastern Michigan. It's a little different than Western Michigan. It's a little less hoity-toity, we'll say.
I'm about to explore
a little more ice fishing going on in the thumb, I'd say, than on the west side of the state.
This summer, I get to explore the UP the most that I've ever done.
Okay.
Going up there for a golf trip that will cover, I think, six courses.
Now,
so
that's a play. I mean, where are you going actually, like, city-wise, do you know?
Whoa.
We're just going across the whole thing, or are you just bouncing around? Yeah, the UP's a hell of a place.
We're bouncing around.
Okay, good.
We're hitting some spots.
Good. Okay, what else we got here? Question wise, I'm
trying to find this the list of courses.
Here's
we'll get to that another day.
Here's one from MJ10 Kool-Aid. A Michigan question: is this Michigan season an aberration? The football, or will they build on it? Or are we going back to Jim Harbaugh of the past years with 8-10 wins and disappointing Novembers and not being able to win big games? I mean, well, that's, you know, that's the billion-dollar question. I think they can actually build on this. And, you know, that's going to be the ultimate thing that he has to prove here in the coming, you know, months and years. Because if you look around the rest of the league, like, it's interesting right now, right? Like, I really like where Michigan State's at, obviously, with Mel Tucker. I think that they're going to be, you know, a growing program in the league that is one that we look at differently, look more closely like we look at Penn State. I think they're going to inch closer to how we look at Penn State in terms of their recruiting profile, things like that. We'll see how it goes, but I think my gut tells me that's going to shift in that direction. So the East is just going to get tougher. But also, Brendan, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Gene Smith at Ohio State recommended that, or said to reporters that if it ever gets to a point where Ohio State hosts a playoff game, you know, if we ever get to a point where we're hosting playoff games, that he's going to recommend they play it inside so that the weather doesn't impact the outcome of the game. This is Ohio State's athletic director saying this. Did you hear this? I have questions right now about Ohio State's football toughness, my man. Urban Meyer isn't there anymore. So I think that the Big Ten East is still very good. And I think Harbaugh's ability last year to inspire the team and get youth injected into it and inspire them to build the whole thing around toughness, I think that was the move. Because right. Michigan State's going to be tough. Michigan is tough. Wisconsin's tough. We know that toughness is still going to run the day in the Big Ten. Penn State is still going to be Penn State. They're going to have the tough athletes coming through. Hey, Ohio State, like, I got questions here, Ryan Day. This is not basketball. No offense. Okay? You're still going to have to. So, we'll see. But, I mean, I don't think it necessarily has to be an aberration if you can continue the momentum around the things that got momentum going last year. Like, if Michigan can get back to being the program that churns offensive lines at a rate that no one's ever seen before, then yes, this is sustainable. And I think that that's the recipe. That's, you saw it last year. That's what you need to lean on. That's what you need to just double down, triple down all the way on and be a team that everyone's going to have to deal with in terms of physicality, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think the sands are shifting a little bit in the Big Ten East. And I have questions about the Big Bad Wolf at the top, because when I hear things like that, we should move our winter playoff games inside. From Ohio State's athletic director, I would have to think that that's coming from the head football coach. And oh my God, what are we talking about right now?
Yeah.
Maybe that was taken out of context. I don't think it was. I went and looked and he said it. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. But either way, to answer the question, it doesn't have to be an aberration. I think they have their identity. And I think that they were able to keep the people that most helped create that, right? I will say. Mike McDonald is a loss, but I think offensively, even though you lost Josh Gattis, I think the offensive line, you know, being stabilized with Sherrone Moore there, that's the money. That's Michigan's path to whatever, you know, you want this to be sustainably. That's where the program has to hang its hat. And I think they've finally gotten to that point, and now you make everybody else deal with it. And that's where it seems to be going. I guess we'll see if it remains on that path.
Right.
But anyway, interesting times, my man. We got breaking crazy news here. What's going on?
Yeah, there's crazy shit going on. Oakland Hills Clubhouse. There's apparently a massive fire.
Oakland Hills Clubhouse?
Oakland Hills Golf Club, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. One of the most prestigious courses in the area. So it's a night.
The roof is on
clubhouse. Clubhouse dates back to 1916. It's the whole thing's wood.
Oh, my.
That is looking like a...
Oh, yeah, I see it here from...
Absolute disaster.
Brad Gailey.
That's awful. It's awful.
I hope everyone's okay, so, anyway.
Yeah, hope everyone's all right there. Actually, no, a few people who I imagine are on site.
Oh, yeah, and that's an old building.
Shooting
oh,
a couple of texts, too. Yeah, 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 it's awful.
Well, hope everyone's okay out there. Anyway, stay safe out there.
Yeah. Okay, so another hoops question. This is from Fall Season.
All right.
Always been curious what Brendan's take is on Gonzaga. There seems to be two schools of thought. People annoyed that they get to waltz to a one seed every year playing high schools, and people who value blowing out said year.
Like high schools.
High schools, whatever.
Yeah.
Where do you stand? Yeah, I mean, I think people probably know where I stand on Gonzaga. I understand the, you know, people who poo-poo it and say it's a joke that they... look, they're in the league that they're in. The league has tried to be strengthened. It's a non-football...
Yeah, they're the ultimate example of what we were talking about earlier with Murray.
like
they are who they are, and they're never going to change. I totally am
fine
with
do you want them to play in the Pac-12 no, and not have football?
I don't ever want them to move.
Do you want them to play in... Okay, so it's a non-football school, or they're supposed to play in the Big East?
Yeah.
They're going to charter across the country for every league game?
Nope.
And Ike, look, they've proven that they translate to March.
Yeah.
Okay, and people want to say, they haven't won a national championship. Well, no shit. A lot of places haven't won national championships. Last year, they were in the national championship game. They went 31-1, okay? And they ran into Baylor, and Baylor was just a bunch of badasses, and they beat them. But
they were a national championship team, and they beat them.
I think you could argue that if they played anyone other than Baylor, they probably would have won the national championship last year.
Yeah, they were really good. A lot of fun to watch.
The year before that, they went 31-2. That was the COVID year. They probably would have been in the Final Four. The year before that, they were in the Elite Eight. The year before that, they were in the Sweet 16. The year before that, they were in the national championship game. The year before that, they were in the Sweet 16. The year before that, they were in the Elite Eight. Okay, so this is not like some team that's getting bounced in the first and second round every year after getting through the WCC. They try to play the best non-conference schedule that they can, and I give them credit for that. I saw them play two games in Vegas in a week this year against Duke and against UCLA. I didn't see any other teams do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Can't get better than
so,
that.
So, look, it's... If you have like issues with how Gonzaga fans come off or that they talk a certain way, I can't speak to that, and I don't really care about that.
Right.
The program, though, what it is,
yeah,
speaks for itself, and it's a small school of 5,000 kids. It's no different than really a Villanova.
No, I would say this. To add to your
so
point.
Not only get over it if you have an issue with Gonzaga.
Not only would I agree.
It's not going away anytime soon.
Not only would I would agree with everything you just said there, I would also say this, that if Gonzaga ever moves or changes, then we need to shut it all down. Because if a place like that ever decides that what it is right now isn't good enough, it needs to adjust or change, then all of this is done. And I mean, we can make the case, and we often do on this show, or at least I do, you're the one who usually holds me back, that it already is over and done, and we're just holding on to the death rattle. But
sure,
if Gonzaga or someone like that ever decides that it's, you know, its place in this whole crazy world that we call college whatever, athletics, is not good enough, then, oh, my, okay, folks, then we need to just wrap it up. Gonzaga is the envy of every mid-major program in the world. Like, it's, you know, it's the pillar of it. Like, and they've, like, we just got done talking about with Murray State, like, they've never faltered on who they are. They've never backed down from sort of what they value and what's never going to change about, you know, what they do. They have a coach who is completely bought into who they are and what they're about, and they don't apologize for it. And why the fuck should they? I don't understand. You know, I'm sorry, they dedicate everything they have to basketball, and that your program maybe doesn't. I don't know what the problem is. If it's jealousy, waltzing to a one seed every year, I don't know. You try to win 30 straight basketball games every year and tell me how it goes. I know a lot of teams that couldn't do that. That would play. Michigan State just got done losing at Penn State the other day and acted like, you know, the building was burning down, right? Like, I mean, teams lose to bad teams. It happens. Like, you know, like they go through every single year and never lose games. I'm sorry. That's not easy to do either. I don't know. You think that every single game they play in that league isn't like whoever they're playing Super Bowl?
Oh, every game.
We're not
going to
act
blue
like,
out.
We're not going to act
every
like
every game's
that's
a blue out, a red out, a white out. You know, every single game. Yeah. And
like,
yeah, I
come
mean,
on.
Shit.
Like that's
BYU isn't bad. BYU is not bad and has like a great home court advantage.
They
Gonzaga
never lose.
Went in there and won by a million this year.
They're a machine. Like, they're a machine, and they should be respected as such. And if they ever change, then that's on the rest of us and not them, I would say, is what I would add to that, yeah. So that's my take on Gonzaga. I agree. I'd probably come full circle on that because it used to be a thing over the years. Back in the day when it started with Gonzaga, yes. Because you remember, who the hell is this team? All they do is win against this shit-ass team over and over for a couple years in a row, and why are we giving them a one seed? Well, oh my God, like you just listed it off. They've been to the damn Elite Eight like 12 times.
Right.
I mean, I think that program whatever matters, right? Like that's, I think your history is certainly something that gets taken into account. And I think that if that ever changes again, the tournament has probably lost some of what makes it unique and special. So,
I mean, I finding the measure and like, I always laugh at like the constant conversation of if Gonzaga were in whatever league, what would they do?
They'd be damn good.
I don't know. They'd be really good. They'd probably lose a couple games, but
they'd probably win several big championships.
Does that not validate? Does that not validate what they're doing? Like, are you going to be offended by the fact that they win the West Coast Conference Championship? Who gives a shit? Like,
yeah, I mean, like,
okay, yes, if Gonzaga played in the Big Ten this year, I still think they'd probably win the league.
I was gonna say, what about last year? Yeah, they probably would have won the league.
Right? Like, would they drop a couple games and finish like 16-4,
right?
Or 17-3? Yeah,
they would have a record that more resembles what you usually see for Michigan State, right? At the end of the year, it would be like 27-6 instead of 30-0 or whatever, and like that would be the difference. That's it. We're talking about like 4 or 5 games. The things that people fixate on with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
About who deserves what seed and all this. No. Yeah, especially not Gonzaga. No. No.
We should have Phil on the pod to talk about this.
I mean, like, it's a... If the tournament ever loses that part of it, like, it's over. Like, the tournament, that's the NCAA tournament. That is what it is.
Have I ever told the Billy Packard story on this pod?
I don't know, maybe, but you can tell it again for those who have forgotten.
So in 2004, when St. Joe's went undefeated in the regular season.
Yes.
It's my junior year. So the team finished 27-0 in the regular season, won the Atlantic 10, obviously didn't lose a game.
We have talked about that team once or twice on this show, yes, I think.
I'm sure we have. Lost in the opening game of the Atlantic 10 tournament to Xavier.
Yeah, whole mess.
And it was still...
One loss.
Granted a one seed.
Right.
In the tournament. It finished the season number one in the AP poll.
27-1.
And lost to Xavier. So that was the year that like Stanford almost finished undefeated and then lost late. The was that the Casey Jacobson team?
Yeah, it was in that era anyway.
But it was in that era. So they go to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Get a one seed. Billy Packer on CBS is like, shouldn't be a one seed.
Right,
this
right.
is a joke. They stink. Blah, blah, blah. He didn't say they stink, but whatever.
Right.
They go to a live shot, CBS, to Martelli and interview him live on TV. And they go, Billy Packer says, you shouldn't be a one seed. And Phil on live TV responded, Billy Packer can kiss my ass. In like the building was half full, right? Because they were doing like the selection show thing, and the place just goes batshit. Everyone's foaming at the mouth.
Oh man! Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the tournament, folks. Like, I mean, so if we ever change that, then what are we doing here? I mean, right? Like, it's the same argument that we used to have when it was like, why do we make 18-13? USC, they get a 13 seed, but 22-2, Murray State has to go to the play-in game, right? Like, there was always these And I mean, the level of difference in competition sometimes isn't as great as we'd like to make it out to be, I think, in college basketball. But that is neither here nor there. You got any other questions?
I don't know. I might have to boogie to deal with another situation.
Got some stuff going on here. So, okay, well, we'll wrap it up.
Is there anything that we needed to
hit on? No, I think we're good. That's good for today.
Okay.
And I think actually before we roll it out of here, I was actually going to drop this out. As we go forward here, I think we're going to make a feature on the show. I'm not sure. Some of you may have participated in some of our live rooms. The Athletic has a feature. But we're going to get together with our producer, Mike, and we're going to figure out how to do some live shows with some of you. So if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, be on the lookout for this. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, become one soon. And you can participate in one of our live shows. I think it'll basically just be like a call-in situation. If you are a subscriber, we can get you in the room. We can chat about whatever. We can do one of these mailbags, more or less like that. And I think it'll allow us to actually talk to you on the or through the app or whatever. So we'll see how it goes, but we're going to get some plans together. I wanted to float that out. So TBD in the coming weeks and days here.
No, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I think it'll be... Take this thing to the next level, my man.
Well, I mean, I told you, we're coming for Netflix, so, you know, everybody just heads up. Here we go. So, be on the watch out.
Well, all right, my brother. I have to go, do some work, I think.
All right.
Appreciate your pal. Appreciate everyone who submitted questions. I'm sorry if we didn't get to any... Maybe I'll try to do some replies to individual ones just on Twitter, because I'm feeling like we're cutting this a little bit short, so...
We're at an hour. We're fine.
Yeah. All right. We appreciate you listening. Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers.
I seen hard times all my days.